Mama, gibst du mir dein Rezept fürs Hühnerfrikassee? Die Kinder lieben das.
Klar, ist doch ganz einfach. Gehst in den Supermarkt, kaufst Froster Hühnerfrikassee und haust das schön in die Pfanne. Genauso lecker wie von mir. Aber sag's keinem.
Doch, mach ich.
Hä?
Peter von Froster hier. Unser Hühnerfrikassee schmeckt wie von Oma selbst gekocht. Mit natürlichen Zutaten nach dem Froster Reinheitsgebot. Gibt's im Supermarkt.
Sag ich doch.
Froster ist für alle da.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Welcome to the Richard Serrett Show. Coming up next, I'm tearing into the rot at the heart of Canada's so-called justice system. A judge lets a creep who tried to buy a 15-year-old girl for $140 walk free. Why? To save his immigration papers. This isn't justice, it's a sick joke. And it's not just the courts. Our public safety minister is tangled up with a terrorist group. 120,000 ballots vanished in a sketchy election. The CBC's waging war on men, and a sneaky gas tax is crushing families already drowning in debt. This is Canada betrayed by elites who'd rather lecture you than serve you. The Richard Serrett Show, off and running for Friday, July the 18th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. Facta non verba.
All of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. The whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone!
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
When a Canadian judge lets a man who tried to buy sex from a 15-year-old girl walk free because a conviction might mess up his immigration paperwork, you know our judicial system isn't just broken, it's a grotesque parody of justice. Akash Kumar Narendra Kumar Kant, an Indian engineer, waltzed into Canada in 2019, chased a civil engineering degree, and decided to cap it off by attempting to purchase a, quote, girlfriend experience with a child for $140. The evidence is ironclad, his guilty plea undisputed, and yet Ontario Court Justice Paul Thomas O'Mara handed him a conditional discharge, citing severe collateral consequences like delayed citizenship or a hiccup in sponsoring his wife. This isn't justice. It's a moral abdication, a judicial system so spineless it prioritizes a predator's passport over the safety of our daughters. And it's time we face the truth. Our courts are a joke. Our judges are morally obtuse. And we need to elect them, or at the very least, vet them with a ferocity that matches the gravity of their power. So here are the sordid details. On December 13, 2023, the Peel Regional Police Human Trafficking Unit launched Project Juno, a sting targeting those seeking to exploit minors. On day one, Kant took the bait, responding to an online ad for a 15-year-old girl. The undercover officer made it crystal clear, multiple times, that the escort was underage. Kant's response? Not revulsion, not retreat, but enthusiasm. Saying he'd see her quite often, quote-unquote, if they hit it off, a chilling nod to a pattern of predation. He showed up at the hotel room, $140 in hand, ready to violate a child. The police arrested him, seized his phone and cash, and secured his guilty plea. The Crown rightly pushed for 90 days in jail, pointing to similar cases where custody was imposed to uphold public trust. But O'Mara, in his infinite wisdom, saw fit to let Kant walk, arguing that a criminal record might derail his engineering license or separate him from his wife. Let that sink in. A man who knowingly sought to exploit a minor was spared because of his career aspirations. If that doesn't make your stomach churn, check your pulse. This case isn't an anomaly. It's a symptom of a justice system that's lost its way, stumbling blindly through a fog of moral relativism and identity-driven leniency. Look at Randall McKenzie, a career criminal with a trail of violence and illegal firearms, released on bail because he's First Nations. Justice Harrison Arell called it iffy, but freed him anyway, citing his ethnicity as a mitigating factor. The result? McKenzie cut off his ankle bracelet, went on a crime spree, and allegedly murdered Constable Greg Pierce-Challa in a cold-blooded ambush. Pierce-Challa was one of 8 Canadian police officers killed in 7 months, a grim record for a nation that once prided itself on law and order. Or consider Mohammed Majidpour, a Vancouver thug with 24 convictions who attacked a woman with a pole, set a car on fire, and was back on the streets after a weekend in custody, only to be arrested twice more before the month was out. Our courts are a revolving door, spitting out predators, murderers, and thieves with a shrug and a pat on the back. This is the legacy of a system warped by policies like Bill C-75, passed in 2019, which ordered judges to grant bail at the earliest possible opportunity, especially to those from, quote, vulnerable populations. It's a system shaped by the 1999 Gladue decision, which mandated lighter sentences for Indigenous offenders, a principle now stretched to absurdity to shield non-citizens like Kant. The result? A crime wave unlike anything Canada has ever seen. In Vancouver, 78% of those arrested for random stranger assaults in 2022 had prior convictions. In Toronto, 44% of suspects in a massive auto theft ring were on bail. Police chiefs are screaming into the void, calling this catch-and-release justice a drain on resources and a dagger to public safety. A 2023 Léger poll found 1 in 5 Canadians have been assaulted, threatened, or screamed at in public. The majority feel less safe. And why wouldn't they? When judges like O'Mara prioritize a predator's immigration status over a child's safety, the message is clear. The system values the criminal more than the victim. Let's take a step back into history, because the past has lessons, and we're foolish to ignore them. In 1984, Denis Lortie stormed the Quebec National Assembly with a machine gun, killed 3, wounded 13, and was out of jail in 11 years. In 1980, Harold Smeltzer drowned 5-year-old Kimberly Thompson and was granted day parole after 27 years, despite admitting he still lusted after children. These cases shocked us, but they were the opening act of a broader tragedy, a shift from justice as retribution to justice as rehabilitation, no matter the cost. Today, that philosophy has metastasized. We're told prisons cause crime, that identity-based sentencing corrects historical wrongs, but the data tells a different story. Indigenous incarceration rates have risen from 20% in 2008 to 28% in 2018, despite Gladue reports and healing lodges. First Nations leaders whose communities bear the brunt of this leniency are begging for harsher sentences, pointing out that their people are both the offenders and the victims. When Miles Sanderson, a man with 59 convictions, was released early and went on a stabbing spree that killed 11 on the James Smith Cree Nation, it wasn't justice. It was betrayal. The root of this madness lies in a judiciary that answers to no one. Judges like O'Mara, appointed in 2016, operate in a vacuum, free to toss drug and firearm charges over procedural hiccups or let predators walk to protect their immigration status. His record is a litany of leniency, staying a heroin case over delayed evidence, dismissing gun charges because the Crown forgot a meeting. This isn't competence, it's negligence. And it's why we need to elect judges, or at the very least vet them with a rigor that matches their power. In the United States, many states elect their judges, forcing them to face the public's wrath when they prioritize a criminal's convenience over a victim's suffering. It's not a perfect system, but it's a damn sight better than ours. where appointed judges wield unchecked power, insulated from accountability. If we vetted judges with half the scrutiny we apply to a job applicant, we might weed out those who think a child predator's citizenship is more sacred than a child's innocence. Electing judges would restore a shred of trust in a system that's bleeding it dry. It would force jurists to look Canadians in the eye and explain why men like Kant deserve a free pass. It would compel them to weigh justice with the fear of the ballot box, not just the comfort of their robes. But if election isn't feasible, then let's demand a vetting process that probes not just legal knowledge, but moral clarity. A process that ensures judges understand that their role is to protect society, not to coddle those who prey on it. The premiers of every province, from David Eby to Danielle Smith, have called for bail reform. Police chiefs are pleading for sanity. First Nations leaders are demanding justice for their ravaged communities. And yet, Ottawa clings to its dogma, insisting that identity-based leniency and endless second chances will save us. They won't. They'll bury us. So, what do? We raise hell. We demand a justice system that puts victims first, that punishes the guilty without regard to race, status, or sob story. We demand judges who answer to us, not to some ivory tower ideology. And we start by saying unequivocally that no one, not an engineer, not a citizen, not a permanent resident, gets to prey on our children and walk away. Akash Kumar Kant should be in a cell, not chasing citizenship. If the system won't hold him accountable, then it's time we hold the system accountable. Elect judges, vet them ruthlessly, restore justice, or watch Canada burn.
News not in the news.
Welcome back, and welcome to News Not in the News, where we shine a light on the stories the mainstream media, those cozy gatekeepers of the Laurentian elite, would rather you didn't hear. Tonight we're diving into the underbelly of a nation adrift, where trust in institutions erodes like a sandcastle at high tide. From a public safety minister entangled with a terrorist group to an election process that raises more questions than it answers. From the cultural assault on men to the grinding financial despair of everyday Canadians. And finally, to a government sneaking higher fuel costs into your tank under the guise of saving the planet. These are the stories shaping our future, whether the CBC likes it or not. Canada's Public Safety Minister, Gary Anandasangari, has recused himself from decisions involving the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, LTTE, a banned terrorist organization, and its Canadian front, the World Tamil Movement. Why? Because, before he was a cabinet minister, Anandasangari wrote letters supporting the immigration application of a man that Canada Border Services Agency deemed an LTTE member involved in propaganda and fundraising. The Sri Lankan government warned Canada in 2014 about Anandasangari's ties to LTTE-affiliated groups, yet Prime Minister Mark Carney appointed him to oversee national security, including the RCMP, CSIS, and terror listings. You can't make this stuff up. Critics argue this is a conflict of interest, so glaring it undermines public safety. A petition at firegary.com demands his resignation, questioning how a minister who can't handle key terror files can protect Canadians. Public safety is the first duty of any government. It's the social contract's foundation, the reason we surrender some freedoms for order and security. John Locke, the father of classical liberalism, argued that government exists to protect life, liberty, and property. When the man tasked with that protection is so entangled with a terrorist group that he must sidestep decisions about it, the contract is broken. Conservatism, at its core, demands competence and trustworthiness in leadership. Anandasangari's recusal isn't a noble gesture, it's an admission of unfitness. If he can't be trusted to oversee files on a group Canada banned in 2006 for its history of assassinations and suicide bombings, what exactly is he doing in the minister's chair? This isn't about one man. It's about a Liberal government that prioritizes identity politics over national security. The appointment of Anandasangari, a Tamil Canadian with a history of advocacy for Tamil causes, reeks of pandering to diaspora voters rather than prioritizing Canada's safety. Carney's government seems snared by its own fear of offending certain communities, even at the cost of public trust. The fact that no one knows who's handling the LTTE files now, some faceless bureaucrat, is a scandal in itself. Transparency is the oxygen of democracy, and this smells like suffocation. Anandasangari must go, not because he's Tamil, but because his past actions cast a shadow over his ability to serve impartially. National security isn't a game of optics. It's life and death. If the Sri Lankan government's warnings in 2014 were ignored, and if Anandasangari's letters downplayed a terrorist's involvement as an error, then his judgment is suspect. Canadians deserve a minister who can face every threat without an asterisk. Carney's refusal to act suggests either cowardice or complicity. Go to firegary.com and sign the petition. Demand a government that puts Canada first, not political expediency. Elections Canada reports that nearly 1 in 10 mail-in ballots, over 120,000 of 1.3 million, went uncounted in the 2025 federal election. Let me repeat that. Nearly 1 in 10 mail-in ballots, that's 120,000 of the 1.3 million mail-in ballots cast, went uncounted in the 2025 federal election. The agency didn't clarify whether these were late or unused, leaving voters in the dark. Some ridings were decided by razor-thin margins. Now, this isn't new. The 2021 election also saw mail-in ballot issues. Adding to the controversy, MPs delayed the scheduled election date, citing Diwali, but called a snap election during Easter, securing pensions for many, including former NDP leader Jagmeet Singh. Critics call this election interference, questioning whether Canada's government was truly elected. Democracy rests on trust, and trust demands transparency. When 120,000 ballots go uncounted, it's not a clerical error, it's a breach of faith. Conservatism values institutions that work, not ones that fumble the basic task of counting votes. The election's timing, manipulated to secure pensions while ignoring Easter significance, reveals a ruling class more concerned with self-preservation than fairness. When citizens' votes are discarded and MPs game the system for personal gain, the democratic spirit withers. Elections Canada's vague reporting and the government's election date shenanigans erode the truth. The fact that voter fraud penalties are steeper than bureaucratic accountability only deepens the cynicism. If ridings were sickeningly close, as Rebel News noted, those uncounted ballots could have swung seats, maybe even the government itself. This isn't a conspiracy theory. It's a call for answers. Canada's election system needs a reckoning, an independent audit of the 2025 election with a riding-by-riding breakdown of uncounted ballots. It's the bare minimum. MPs who voted to delay the election for pensions should face scrutiny, not rewards. This isn't about one party. It's about a system that feels rigged to protect the powerful. If we don't demand accountability, we're complicit in letting democracy slide into a bureaucratic abyss. Canadians deserve to know their votes count, not just their MPs' pensions. A CBC report claims that online influencers like Andrew Tate and Joe Rogan, part of the so-called manosphere, are fueling divorces by promoting misogynistic views. A Swift Current lawyer says men are adopting traditional values from these podcasts, leading to marital strife. Critics, including conservative commentators, call the report a taxpayer-funded attack on alternative male perspectives. They argue it pathologizes men's struggles in a society that often dismisses them. Meanwhile, marriage rates are down, with only 44.3% of Canadians over 15 married in 2021, down from 54.1% in 1991. The report sidesteps broader cultural issues, blaming influencers instead. The CBC's report is a masterclass in narrative spin. By framing the manosphere as a misogynistic bogeyman, it deflects from the deeper crisis, the unraveling of the family unit. Families are society's bedrock, fostering stability and moral grounding. The CBC's focus on Tate and Rogan ignores the real culprits, a culture that devalues masculinity, mocks fatherhood, and incentivizes family breakdown through no-fault divorce laws and economic strain. The report's bias is glaring. As Michael Thiessen noted, no one would tolerate a publicly funded hit piece blaming feminism for divorce. Yet, the CBC and your tax dollars vilifies men seeking meaning in a world that often tells them they're the problem. The manosphere isn't perfect. Some voices are crude or extreme, but it's a symptom, not the disease. Men are turning to Rogan or Tate because they feel alienated, not because they hate women. As Calgary psychotherapist Elise Montgomery said, the pain is real. Conservatism demands we address root causes, not scapegoat influencers. The CBC owes Canadians an apology. This report isn't journalism, it's propaganda, weaponizing family pain to push a progressive agenda. Instead of demonizing men, let's talk about why marriage rates are collapsing. Let's address a culture that leaves men feeling disposable and women unsupported. Defund the CBC and redirect those funds to family counseling or tax breaks for married couples. The state broadcaster's obsession with misogyny over truth proves it's more interested in ideology than solutions. Men and women deserve better. They deserve a society that values their union, not one that pits them against each other.
Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App AOK Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App AOK Navida downloaden und loslegen. AOK Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche. Auch bei den Johnsons. Oder, Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Unser Bestes von Persil.
Du willst beides? Aktives Fondsmanagement und die Vorteile eines ETFs? Xtrackers aktive ETFs liefern genau das. Die Verbindung von smartem Portfolio-Management mit effizienter ETF-Struktur. Kosteneffizient und mit dem Potenzial für Überrenditen. Aktive Strategie trifft auf ETF-Effizienz. Informiere dich jetzt auf xtrackers.de. Zusammenwachsen. Investitionen unterliegen Risiken. Werbemitteilung herausgegeben von der DWS International GmbH mit Sitz in Frankfurt.
A Harris & Partners survey of 1,731 Canadians reveals that 57.3% can't cover essentials like rent, groceries, and utilities with their income. Many are relying on credit cards or skipping bills, signaling deeper financial trouble. Inflation may have cooled, but costs remain high and wage growth lags. The firm's CEO, Joshua Harris, warns of emotional and psychological tolls, with Canadians feeling hopeless and exhausted. The survey calls for better financial education and systemic change to address income inadequacy. This is the story of a nation squeezed dry. Conservatism champions the dignity of work and the right to enjoy its fruits, yet over half of Canadians are drowning despite their efforts. When full-time jobs can't cover rent, the system has failed. This isn't about laziness. It's about a government that's bloated, tax-happy, and indifferent to the working class. The Laurentian elite, sipping lattes in Ottawa, seem oblivious to the grocery store lines where families ration their budgets. Milton Friedman once said, "One of the great mistakes is to judge policies by their intentions rather than their results." The Liberal government's endless spending on everything from climate schemes to bloated bureaucracies has fueled this crisis. Meanwhile, Canadians are forced to choose between heat and food. This is energy poverty. As the Journal of Public Health noted, affecting 6 to 19% of households, it's a moral failing when a resource-rich nation leaves its people cold and hungry. The government needs to get out of the way, cut taxes, slash red tape, and let Canadians keep more of their money. Financial education is fine, but it's a band-aid on a broken system. We need structural reform. Lower corporate taxes to boost jobs, energy policies that prioritize affordability over ideology, and a government that respects the working men and women. If Carney's Liberals won't act, conservatives must champion the forgotten Canadian, restoring hope through freedom and opportunity. A federal briefing note predicts the clean fuel regulations will raise gasoline prices by 6 to 13 cents per liter and diesel by 7 to 16 cents per liter by 2030. The government insists this isn't a tax, but a market-based mechanism to spur clean tech innovation. Yet, the Journal of Public Health warns that high fuel costs exacerbate energy poverty, affecting 6 to 19% households. The regulations mandate higher ethanol and biodiesel blends, despite warnings from federal consultants about the broader costs of climate policies on housing, food security, and affordability. Here's the Liberal playbook. Dress up a tax as a virtue, then tell Canadians they won't notice. The clean fuel regulations are a stealth tax, plain and simple, hitting drivers at the pump to fund an ideological crusade. Conservatism respects stewardship of the environment, God's creation, as Genesis 1:28 commands, but it demands practicality. These regulations, with their mandated ethanol and biodiesel blends, aren't just about reducing emissions. They're about control, about reshaping your life to fit a utopian vision that ignores the real-world pain of families already stretched thin. The government's own report admits the impact will hit harder in some provinces, like the Atlantic, where fuel costs are already a lifeline for rural communities. Yet they shrug and say, you won't notice. Tell that to the single mother in Newfoundland, choosing between filling her tank to get to work or buying groceries for her kids. The Journal of Public Health lays it bare. Energy poverty is real, affecting up to 1 in 5 Canadian households. That's millions of people spending over 10% of their income just to keep the lights on and the car running. This isn't abstract policy. It's a direct assault on the working class, the very people conservatives champion. Those who rise early, work hard, and ask only for a fair shot. As C.S. Lewis wrote, of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. The Liberals' climate zeal feels like that tyranny, cloaked in green rhetoric but crushing the vulnerable under its weight. The 2024 What We Heard report admitted climate policies must address housing, food insecurity, and affordability. Yet, the government plows ahead, indifferent to the human cost. This is the hubris of central planners who think they can engineer prosperity while raising the cost of the fuel that powers Canada's economy. This is a betrayal of stewardship. We're called to care for the poor and the needy, not to burden them with policies that make life harder. This is a policy that punishes the prudent to appease the pious. The clean fuel regulations aren't about innovation, they're about ideology, a top-down dictate that ignores the real-world consequences for ordinary Canadians. The government's claim that you won't notice the price hike is an insult to your intelligence and your wallet. Conservatives must push back hard. We need energy policies that prioritize affordability and reliability, not ones that sacrifice families on the altar of net-zero fantasies. Demand a rollback of these regulations. Call your MP, write to the Agriculture Minister, and make it clear. Canadians deserve energy they can afford, not a lecture on emissions. The fight for economic freedom is a fight for the dignity of every household struggling to make ends meet. We've peeled back the curtain on a Canada slipping from our grasp. A public safety minister who can't touch terror files because of his own past. A scandal that undermines the very trust he's meant to uphold. An election where 120,000 ballots vanished into the ether, leaving us to wonder if our democracy is more theater than truth. A state broadcaster vilifying men for seeking meaning in a world that scorns them, while families crumble under cultural decay. A cost of living crisis that's left over half of Canadians drowning in debt or despair, unable to afford the basics of life. And now, a hidden tax at the gas pump dressed up as environmental virtue, hitting the poorest hardest. This is not the Canada of our fathers, a land of freedom, fairness, and opportunity. It's a nation where elites lecture while citizens suffer. These stories aren't isolated. They're symptoms of a deeper rot, a government that's forgotten its first duty to its people. So what do? We act. Sign the petition at firegary.com to demand a public safety minister who can do the job fully. Call for an audit of the 2025 election to ensure every vote counts. Support policies that strengthen families, not divides them. Advocate for financial relief, tax cuts, deregulations, and energy policies that put Canadians first. And above all, hold fast to the values that built this nation. Faith, freedom, and the courage to speak truth. I'm Richard Serrett. I'll speak to you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.